You're listening to the Fantasy Football Astronauts.
So I'm not sure if you guys have heard, but astronauts have spotted three near-Earth asteroids that were lurking undetected within the glare of the sun, according to a new report from CNN. Reports are inaccurate. Those were just the moon bombs that Jalen Hurts threw to A.J. Brown last week, and they're finally coming down for scoring those touchdowns. Welcome back. Seriously, guys, this is just the Fantasy Football Astronauts podcast. This is your host, Daniel Harms, talking. We are going to get into everything today. You guys can find me and all my work on Twitter at InHarmsWay19. I do a bunch of stuff for the Chiefs based all on film analysts, rgrfootball.com, and I'll take you right to the YouTube page. This is week 9, and we are halfway through the season. A lot of teams have played 7-8 games. We're getting to see how these teams look, and it's really helping me get a better grip on my picks and my betting type of analysis for the year. So I'm not ready to go public with all that information yet, but I had my best week in picks last week, especially against the spread, 111-4. So we'll see if we can get on a roll here, and then I'll start to share those. But who else is getting on a roll? Like, that's what we need to talk about. Obviously, we know that the Philadelphia Eagles are on a roll right now. The three best teams, at least by consensus, are the Philadelphia Eagles, the Buffalo Bills, and the Kansas City Chiefs. But there are players within every team that maybe they're getting on a roll, too. And are you going to play these guys this week? For example, Taylor Heinicke is now 2-0 as a starter for the Washington Commanders. I know that it's not fun to talk about playing Taylor Heinicke, but last week he did have 22 points, okay? So when we have these conundrums, we have to kind of take in a deep, overarching look at what these players are, okay? We know that Taylor Heinicke is not the best quarterback in the world. That's just an obvious thing that you can say. But when you look at the schedule, who they play in week 9, they are playing the Minnesota Vikings. And in that game, they are 3-point dogs against the Vikings. It's a 44.5-point game total. Like, when you think about this type of game, I don't think that the Vikings have the best defense in the world by any stretch. And it seems to me that they could come out in this game and establish themselves early, that being the Vikings. That would allow Taylor Heinicke to do exactly what he does best, which is play from behind, and he can just throw the ball all over the yard to all the players that they want to, and that screams a type of play for me. I'm not talking about one QB league. He's definitely more of a super flex play, maybe even more of a DFS shot if you're thinking about playing him with maybe Antonio Gibson as well as Terry McLaurin, that kind of feels. So in terms of your super flex leagues or even your super flex redraft leagues, if you're struggling at quarterback for the bye week, say you have a bye this week and you need someone to plug in and play, and you got Taylor Heinicke either on the bench or the waiver wire, I think it makes a lot of sense to look at him for this week, much like last week, because if you're looking for a guy who can come get you maybe 22 points and kind of keep your team above the water, he's someone that can definitely do that. So he's a streaming quarterback too for me this week. I think he makes a lot of sense in that regard. So I'm probably playing him, again, if I have that situation. I'm not doing this in one QB leagues. If I have my quarterback, if I got a guy in a bye, I'm going to go ahead and plug him in because I do think he can keep my team above float. Anywhere between 16 and 20 points is really what I'm looking for. If he gets over that, beautiful. It helps me win my week. So yeah, I'm probably going to play a little bit of Taylor Heinicke if I have to. Definitely going to do some of that in DFS depending on how that works. I know I said last week I wasn't going to play it anymore, but things change week to week, much like all of players in all across fantasy football. Kenyon Drake, he has been changing week to week. First, J.K. Dobbins comes back. He sees the bulk of the workload. J.K. Dobbins gets hurt. Gus Edwards comes back. He sees the bulk of the work. He gets hurt again. And then Kenyon Drake is back in the fold as being the guy probably you're going to want to play. I don't know right now as I'm recording this the news on Gus Edwards' playing time, but if he's not playing, Kenyon Drake becomes a guy that I do want to get a part of, just because the simple fact of the matter is, at worst, he's probably going to get some receptions. He probably even scores a red zone touchdown. Maybe he gets in the end zone twice. Probably not, but you're looking for a guy who has that upside. And in the Baltimore Ravens rushing attack, he is someone that you're going to want to at least consider playing. And when I look at the fact that they're going to be playing against the New Orleans Saints, okay? I don't think the Ravens defense is quite there yet. I know the Saints defense is pretty good. I don't necessarily think that they've been as good as they are in years past, but I do think that this is a team, if you focus like the Ravens like to do and on that run game and attack it with downhill, again, passes out of the backfield. I think Kenyon Drake brings more of that to the table. And again, the Saints offense has been getting better. I think Andy Dalton has resurrected them a little bit. On Monday Night Football, he's going to come in, and I think that they have a chance to lead at some point in this game. The Ravens offense is maybe be from behind, but if you look at the weapons, you know, without Rashad Bateman, maybe they'll be without Mark Andrews again. That talks about two guys, really, that I'm going to talk about right now. Is that Isaiah Likely as well? I'm definitely going to play Isaiah Likely in the event that Mark Andrews is not there. He's not playing because he's a wide receiver, much like Mark Andrews playing the tight end position. So I think you can really do a lot of damage with Isaiah Likely, and then you can bring it back with Kenyon Drake. I'm probably not going to play Kenyon Drake as much just because of the rushing defense and the defense in and of itself in New Orleans. I don't necessarily think that Kenyon Drake is the guy to just pop off like that. But again, you know, he gets in the end zone, things kind of change. Again, it's all based systematically by your team. He's more of an RB3 for me this week, even if he's seeing the majority of the workload. The passing volume that he's probably going to get does bump that up a little bit. He had 4 targets last week. And again, this is based on him being the guy in that offense. And so I'm hoping, you know, when he is the guy, he does see more of the targets, the workload, and the touchdowns. So that's something that I'm definitely looking for. And the both games that I think that he was the majority shareholder on this offense, the New York Giants, and then the week against Tampa Bay after Gus Edwards went out, he got in the end zone both of those times. And when you think about passing attack, you know, 2 targets against the Giants and 4 targets against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that's more than his entire the rest of the game combined. So I'm looking at that. And again, it's all about based on matchups for your teams and other players that you have, other running backs that you have. If it's a long shot, I mean, you don't really have a choice. But I'm definitely playing Isaiah Likely, and Kenyon Drake is definitely more of a week-to-week, situation-to-situation kind of thing. And now over to a guy who I was so high on coming out of the draft 2 years ago now, good Lord. Terrace Marshall. This is a very interesting concept for the Carolina Panthers, because PJ Walker is playing better than any quarterback has played since before Cam Newton came back the second time. That's how good PJ Walker has been the last 2 weeks, and now he's probably going to be the starter the rest of the year. Maybe Sam Darnold early last year was playing well, but that was really more due to his own rushing attack. This is an interesting line for Terrace Marshall, coming off his best ever season or best ever game as a professional football player. And they're playing the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't think the Bengals' offense is great right now without Ja'Marr Chase, but they did just get destroyed by the Cleveland Browns on national TV. These are things that I do think play into the mind and the mentality of a team, and they're looking to bounce back. And the Carolina Panthers give them an opportunity to do so. I do think that they're going to come out and put some points on the board. And if you look at the defense for the Cincinnati Bengals, look at their injury report. I know it's right now, it's still a little bit early. One of their corners practiced, Eli Apple. And we all know burnt toast Eli Apple isn't going to be able to guard everybody. They're probably going to put him up against their best player, DJ Moore. We're talking about a cornerback group that could be decimated come next week. And even if the Bengals put up a fight and then they come out and they put up a ton of points, that's a prime spot for PJ Walker to go up against this defense that's hurt. And I do think that Terrace Marshall, he's getting comfortable. They're getting the playbook. They're getting on the field. He's going to be the number 2 receiver in that offense. And when I just think about how they can attack with him down the field, his speed is real. Like, he's starting to get comfortable. He looked pretty comfortable last week against a bad Atlanta Falcons defense. But this Cincinnati Bengals defense isn't very good, especially if they're all going to be hurt playing against this in this game. So yeah, I'm going to play a little bit of Terrace Marshall this week. I think he can get in the end zone. And again, he had 87 yards last week on 9 targets, 4 receptions. He does need to kind of work on catching the football a little bit better. But 9.7 yards per reception, that dog will hunt, or per target, excuse me, 21.8 yards per reception, that dog will hunt. I'm going to be playing Terrace Marshall Jr. this week. And all of my shares are going to be so happy that I finally get to insert him into the starting lineup. Can't tell you how good that feels. I just wanted to touch on one last guy because I've seen some interesting tweets about over the course of the last 3 weeks, he has, you know, 22 targets. But let's look a little bit of context with Robert Tonyan, okay? While this offense is interesting in Green Bay, it does not flow through Robert Tonyan, and he's not getting the touchdowns, okay? That's a big problem for a player that is really kind of touchdown dependent outside of one game this season where he had, you know, 19 points without a touchdown. He had 12 targets against the Jets 3 weeks ago. And that's really what's inflating his numbers. Over the course of the last 2 weeks, he's seen four targets against the Washington Commanders and for 32 yards, six targets and for five catches and 35 yards against the Buffalo Bills. That gets you 8 points and 6 points. So that's a little bit of an inflation. If he's not getting touchdowns, then I'm not playing Robert Tonyan. He has one touchdown this entire season, and he's played every single game. So with the return of Alan Lazard actually kind of takes some of the touchdown upside out of Robert Tonyan, because Lazard's been the go-to red zone player in terms of through the air. And I think that Romeo Doubs is playing better. They're going to probably start to incorporate Samori Toure a little bit. If I pronounced that wrong, I apologize. Robert Tonyan is starting to kind of fade, especially because they're going to be using a little bit more two running back sets, in my opinion, because of the way that Aaron Jones is playing. I do think that Robert Tonyan's fantasy value is starting to deter. And weirdly enough, he's still tight end 12 on the season. That's weird in and of itself, to be honest with you. So it's really hard to say that he's going to be someone that you really have to look at playing in an offense that's struggling against, you know, the insurmountable odds that they have against. I know they're playing the Lions, which is a very fun matchup for them. I could definitely see him feasting against the linebacking core that is the Detroit Lions. So maybe it's more of a one-off thing for Robert Tonyan. And, you know, as I talk about the Detroit Lions, I forgot they were playing against the Detroit Lions, which brings a whole new element into this, because again, they could put a ton of points on the Detroit Lions. They usually do. The Lions defense is bad. I'm just not sure how this offensive game is going to go for the Green Bay Packers. But again, even if Alan Lazard is back, I do think now that I'm thinking about it, that I'm talking about it, that I'm talking about the Detroit Lions, that there is some upside for him in this specific game. I don't trust him going forward because I don't trust this offense, and Aaron Rodgers has not been Aaron Rodgers to this point. The team around him has just kind of been decimated. The defense has been horrible. The energy is not there like we've seen. It's just different. So Robert Tonyan has probably some pretty good value this week, especially if Alan Lazard doesn't play. So keep your eye on that. If he doesn't play, I think he has a pretty big game against the Detroit Lions. If he does, he probably still could. I think it's a less likely scenario in that case. But those are some of the guys that probably under the radar plays that I wanted to hit before we go into week 9. I'm going to talk about some four games. We're going to talk about that Packers Lions game. Okay. I just kind of talked about a little bit with Robert Tonyan. Let's talk about the opposite sides. This is a 49 point projected over under game against the Packers and Lions. The Lions defense is by all accounts the worst in the NFL. Their secondary is also 32nd in the NFL, there's a huge gap between them and the 31st team. They're that bad. Even with, in my opinion, how good Jeff Okuda has played, everyone behind him, the safeties and every other corner, just has not been good. They have one of the worst linebacker cores in the NFL, and you can attack that. So I do think you could see a game very, very big on the ground from Aaron Jones, even through the air to that extent. He could get, you know, almost double-digit targets. And that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg for him. And when you look at the way that this receiving attack has been distributed, their leading receiver is Alan Lazard. Okay. Their second leading receiver, funny enough, is Romeo Doubs. You have Robert Tonyan with 286 yards on the season behind them, and then Randall Cobb, who's obviously on IR right now, behind them. So Alan Lazard also has four touchdowns. That's something to be looked at. If he plays, he is a must start no matter what. I think he's probably going to play against Okuda, but they can do a lot of things in moving him around and getting him off of Jeff Okuda. So I would think you could find ways, especially getting in the red zone. I think is something you can really scheme up some Alan Lazard touchdowns. And I like that option here. AJ Dillon's an interesting play for me because they've been having some trouble getting AJ Dillon going. And when you look at, you know, his season, it's not the best. I want to look at his receiving over the course of the season, because I did think that while Aaron Jones was the obvious person that could get some of those targets and everything like that, a lot of people were really high on AJ Dillon's ability to receive. But when we look at it, we have like four games where he has almost no targets. One target against Buffalo, zero targets against Washington, zero against the Giants, one against New England. Like, this is something, it's hard to play him every week because he's become so touchdown dependent. And I think that's what it really comes down to, is that A.J. Dillon is a very touchdown dependent player. He has one touchdown. It was the first week of the season. And since then, he's cracked 50 yards twice. 73 yards against New England, 54 yards last week against Buffalo. If they bring that running game to Detroit, they will run all over that defense. So, yeah, he could get in the end zone this week. He's more of a sketchy play for me personally. I have a couple of shares of A.J. Dillon. I'm probably not playing him. But again, when we talk about the receiving options, I think that Romeo Doubs is going to be the best play out of all of their receivers this week. And hopefully, with Alan Lazard back, assuming he is, he becomes even better for me. He's not facing the number one corner in Jeff Okuda, and I think that brings you a lot of value. And again, a defense that is very, very bad. They're going to be rotating a lot of receivers out, but I think Doubs can play a big down-the-field role like we saw last week. You know, he's able to generate a lot of yards in terms of at the catch point. That's where I think his best traits and abilities lie. You know, some deep digs over the middle of the field. A guy who's not going to create a ton of separation with his route running, but he has decent hands through contact. I know he has some drop problems, but, you know, he's still learning the offense. I think Aaron Rodgers is starting to trust him a little bit here and there. And obviously your other rookie, Christian Watson's been hurt, dealing with a number of different injuries. Really a lot of the receivers on this team have been dealing with some injuries all season. So it's an interesting game from the Green Bay standpoint. Over to the Detroit side, I think this could be a lot of fun. The Green Bay defense has not been as good as a lot of people thought. They are. The Lions are at home, and at home their offense has been one of the best in the NFL. You're hopefully getting an Amon-Ra St. Brown that is healthy, fully healthy. I think last week they got him back into the fold, and he's going to probably hopefully be better this week. Talk about injuries. I'm a little concerned about DeAndre Swift. We don't really know what's going on with him right now. I know he didn't practice on Tuesday. On Wednesday. They say he's not fully right. They may have pushed him too hard. That's concerning. That's very concerning for me for this season, particularly. Again, he's already a guy who's dealt with multiple injuries in his young career. So Jamal Williams is a smash play for me. Like, I'm just playing him. I'm plugging him in. I'm starting him no matter what. Then you have the tight end situation. With T.J. Hockenson now out of Detroit, we have two guys in James Mitchell and Brock Wright, which are probably going to be given some opportunities to show that they can be impactful. Brock Wright has concussion symptoms right now, so that really leaves James Mitchell as a guy who could really have a good game against the Green Bay Packers with, you know, I think that Jared Goff gets a lot of crap, but his best throws are really over the middle of the field, and that's where your tight ends can shine. I think that's where they can really utilize this passing attack with Jared Goff, the play-action game with Jamal Williams. I mean, that's just really what you're looking for. I think Khalif Raymond will have a couple of big plays down the field like he typically does. That's just kind of what they do with that offense. And Amon-Ra could have a lot of just kind of peppering. I think he could be more of a PPR play this week instead of getting in the end zone. But again, this game itself for the 49-point total could be bonkers. It could be hugely, much like the Lions and the Seahawks a few weeks ago. I think it could be like that because while everyone is down on the Packers offense, all it takes is a game to get right and a get right game. And the Detroit Lions offer you a get right opportunity with the defense that is. So basically what I'm trying to say with this game is if you have Packers players outside of maybe Tanyan and Dillon, they're really more of kind of if you have to play them, play them. But again, against the defense, you feel better about that. But these guys you're going to play. I'm playing Amon-Ra. You're going to play Jamal Williams. I'm playing Jared Goff because I think they're going to be down in this game and have to throw the ball too. So that kind of helps him get to his benchmark too. This game could be a lot of fun. And I'm actually kind of excited to watch this game because while the Detroit Lions defense, like I said, is so bad, I do think that in-division matchups could bring the best out of the offenses, and that's what we're looking for in fantasy. So yeah, 49-point total, I think it goes over and it's a lot of fun. The next thing I'm going to talk about, which I think is kind of sneaky, I know that the point total is pretty high, 49.5 points for the Chargers and the Falcons. Funny enough, the Falcons also have one of the worst defenses in the NFL. The Chargers defense isn't very good. They're one of the worst defenses in the NFL in terms of rushing. And what do we know about Arthur Smith and the Atlanta Falcons? They want to run the ball down your throat. They don't really care. Like, we saw Cordell Patterson back at practice this week. If he is back, that gives a huge boost to that rushing attack and allows them to do a ton more different things to be more efficient in the passing game. Funny enough, this is one of the most efficient offenses in the NFL this year, even with the pass. They're 7th passing the football in efficiency. They're 6th rushing the football in efficiency as a total. They're the 7th most efficient team in the NFL. So whatever that Arthur Smith is doing, he's doing right in the sense that they're getting better play in terms of all of their offense. We know Marcus Mariota isn't the throw the ball all over the yard kind of guy. He's just not that kind of guy. But he does have a week-to-week value as a rusher, and he's going to score some touchdowns with Kyle Pitts, you know, all of those guys. I do think that Omalede Zaccheaus is one of the most efficient receivers in the NFL. We've seen Damir Bird go off a couple weeks now with deep balls. That, especially in DFS, that's a guy you really like to play for the minimum to be able to get those big boom plays. And Drake London, hopefully he starts to bounce back a little bit. But the Chargers side of this game is very interesting to me because we've seen their offense be super vanilla, and the average depth of target for Justin Herbert has gone down like from year to year. And that's not really great. Yards per attempt this year is 6.5. He has 12 touchdowns, 4 picks. And really, for me, I'm looking at the average depth of target is 6.8. This is a high school offense. Without Mike Williams this week, probably without Keenan Allen. We're talking about Gerald Everett and Joshua Palmer as their best receivers that aren't a running back. That's concerning. I know that the defense they're playing is bad, but the offense they run is already so rudimentary. They don't throw the ball down the field a ton. They can't generate big plays in the passing game without Mike Williams. What's it going to look like? Is it going to look even more like this against the Falcons, who offer opportunities to throw the ball down the field? I do think you have to stretch the defense. You have to get maybe Joshua Palmer, Gerald Everett running some more deeper routes in this game. Austin Eckler is absolutely going to have, like, if you have props, rushing props for him to be the highest rushing player this week, you might want to bet some of those, because the Falcons offer one of the worst rushing defenses, and ever since the Chargers have gone to more of a gap scheme, which is creating more room for running backs to run anyway, when you see a bunch of these two high shells on the defense, you're creating space underneath for running backs and running games. Their defenses are mentally doing that on purpose, saying, we don't want you to throw the football, run the ball. So the Chargers understood that. They went to more of a gap scheme, creating more space for one of the most elusive backs in the NFL in Austin Eckler. He is going to have a day against the Atlanta Falcons. You play him. I'm playing Josh Palmer this week. I do think he's going to have a good day. Again, their corner situation is awful. They just traded for Rashad Fenton from the Chiefs, who was going to be benched when their rookie came back. They're playing 3 rookies, guys. That tells you what they feel about Rashad Fenton. So yeah, this game could be just a ton of points. Kyle Pitts, I think, is going to have another touchdown this week, because while he's playing against probably Derwin James, I would imagine he's seasoned a lot of this game. Which unicorn is going to win out? Because Derwin James, in my opinion, is a unicorn of a safety player, and we all know Kyle Pitts is a unicorn. So who's going to win out that matchup? Drake London could also get in the end zone. But I do think that Cordell Patterson shifts the power in this game to the Falcons. They could very easily, but they could win this game. I truly believe that with Cordell Patterson back, they could really give the Chargers a challenge and a huge, huge fight in this game. So I'm very intrigued to watch this, because when you watch the Atlanta Falcons run game, even with guys like Tyler Algier and Caleb Huntley, they've been able to chunk defenses to death because of the way that Arthur Smith has designed their offense. It's very, very fluid. They basically match what they can do each play with the defense out there. They use Marcus Mariota in the running game, which obviously adds a whole different element. They can really do a lot of things with their rushing attack and their scheme that puts defenses on notice. And we know the Chargers don't play the run very well. So if he comes back, I think Cordell Patterson can have a huge game. If he doesn't, Caleb Huntley probably has the best out of the two to have the better game on the ground. But it's so hit or miss with those guys, it's really hard to tell. It's also really hard for me to start playing guys like Drake London, Zaccheaus every single week. They're going to have boom or bust weeks, and it's hard to tell which one is going to be which. So I do feel a little more confident about Drake London this week because, again, if they do take away Kyle Pitts, putting Derwin James on him and then kind of shading a safety or shading somebody to him, you have more of the options to get Drake London the ball against a secondary that hasn't been very good outside of Derwin James. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and I think this could be really, really high scoring. Could go over as well. So all those players, if you're questioning whether you should play some guys, I understand that to a regard. But pretty much, I mean, outside of maybe Damir Bird, then Zaccheaus and Pruitt and Firkser, or players like that, you're probably starting most of these guys whenever you get the opportunity. So points, points, points. That's what we're looking for in fantasy, right? That's why I go over some of the highest scoring possible games, in my opinion. And we're also going to cover one of a game that maybe isn't on your radar in terms of both teams having lots of points scored. But before we get there, Seahawks versus Cardinals, another 49.5 over under. We know the Seahawks have been one of the talks of the NFL, 5-3 on the season, leading that division. Playing the Cardinals, who, I mean, this is kind of what I thought the Cardinals would be. They're not great. They're not a great defense. They have some systematic problems on offense with Cliff Kingsbury always trying to force things. Playing DeAndre Hopkins exclusively on the left side of the offensive formation, kind of using Rondale Moore as an extension of the run game, which is fine. I have no issues using Rondale Moore as an extension of the run game. It's fine with me. Then you have Zach Ertz that they've started to use in some screens. They really patrols the middle of the field. They can get in the end zone too. It's a fun offense that when you, in concept, like you think about a healthy Marquise Brown with DeAndre Hopkins, with Rondale Moore, with Zach Ertz, and now, you know, you have the running back problem. Hopefully Connor comes back at some point. Eno Benjamin's been fine, but this offense has a lot of potential. It's got a lot of fun to talk about, but it finds ways to struggle, and a lot of that has to do with the coaching staff. I don't think that Cliff Kingsbury is an NFL coach. I think most people understand that he's really not. He's running a high school offense. These kinds of just throw a bunch of receivers on the field and hope they get open just doesn't always work. Now that DeAndre Hopkins is back, he's showing everyone that he's not dead in the water. Like he would have been just fine had Marquise Brown not gotten hurt two or three weeks ago. He would have been just fine in this offense with him as well. They would have really helped each other thrive, and I think that would have extended this offense to what it could really be. But go back and watch the Minnesota Vikings versus the Cardinals last week, and you can see exactly why DeAndre Hopkins is one of the best receivers in the NFL still to this day. He plays his first game back, they played him a lot out of the slot, and that reduced the impactfulness of Rondale Moore. Last week, they finally got Rondale Moore back in the slot and used DeAndre Hopkins all over the field. They really only threw to him when he was on the left side. That's why you saw a ton. If you go to like his receiving chart on Next Gen Stats, you can see just a ton of white lines on the left side. It's pretty funny, actually, to see that in the way that they use the offense. But still so impactful. They matched him up against Cam Dantzler all game, pretty much. And he was just exploiting blind spots, using a little bit of offensive pass interference to his advantage. Because at the end of the day, when you can't separate like normally can, we've seen DeAndre Hopkins. He's more of the, I'm going to win with a little bit more manipulation tactics, and maybe I'm not going to create separation, but I'm going to win at the catch point all the time, which he did again in this game. He has a disgusting one-handed touchdown grab. If you haven't seen it, you should go watch it. He acts so nonchalant about it. It's ridiculous what he does. But when you can use offensive pass interference to your advantage, meaning pushing off a little bit and not getting caught, understanding the nuances of the game to that extent, especially when you're underneath against a linebacker who's moving with you, you just kind of push him a little bit. He's already moving that way, and he gets huge space underneath to make it easy for Kyler Murray to get him the football. So there's so many things that you can understand by watching DeAndre Hopkins play football. Like, I'm gonna put some tweets out over the course of the week about DeAndre Hopkins. If you're not following me on Twitter at InHarmsWay19, you really should be. Tons and tons of film analysts that I do on a weekly basis, and he's going to have a nice amount this week because he's just so much fun to watch, and the way he understands defenses is one of the most underrated aspects of playing receiver. You know, last week, Matt and I talked about it at length, really, about how a lot of receivers should play quarterback at some point just to understand what defensive structure looks like so you can get open at all times, and DeAndre Hopkins does a great job of that. Now, enough with my DeAndre Hopkins love fest. And I do think that, you know, Benjamin could have a pretty good game. You know, unfortunately, Darrell Williams is now on the IR. That means that he, Benjamin and Keontae Ingram are going to be the 1-2. I think, much like Matt was talking about last week, that Keontae Ingram may offer more upside. But I do think Eno Benjamin, when he's had the workload, has been a very good running back in this offense. I think he could have some targets in this game. It could be a lot of fun because, again, the Seahawks on the opposite side, we kind of thought they were going to play dead last week in terms of bringing DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett back, and just kind of using them as decoys for everybody else. Didn't happen that way. Both DK and Tyler Lockett scored a touchdown last week. And again, we keep talking about Geno Smith, this offense, and Kenneth Walker with these two receivers. It's really good. It's really fun. And they're sound fundamentally and in offensive structure. Geno Smith is just executing this offense. So again, the Cardinals defense, while I think it's been pretty decent against the run, against throwing the football, against the pass, it's not that great. And Geno can exploit that with these two weapons and these two receivers. Tyler Lockett, again, is a must play. DK Metcalf, must play. I do think Kenneth Walker, regardless, is a must play. This offense, this entire game, could explode with point totals. The Cardinals, I do think, are starting to get a little bit more comfortable with DeAndre Hopkins back. They're starting to understand how to utilize Rondale Moore as an extension of the run game, as well as being able to utilize him in the passing game, in the quick screen game, and things like that. I'm hoping that they continue to do that. And again, Zach Ertz, every single week, is a must-start player. He's just been Mr. Consistent. He scores touchdowns. Like, that's what you want from the tight end position, especially as we've seen the deterioration of the position. You just have to be able to get guys that can score touchdowns, and Ertz can do that. And yeah, this game, again, could very well go over. And now, you know, I've talked about three games that I think could go over. It wouldn't surprise me if half of them went under. So, I mean, that's football for you, especially this year. You never really know what's going to happen. Now, there's one game that I think could be high scoring. It could, on both sides, it could be very high scoring. The Miami Dolphins against the Chicago Bears currently is a 45-point over and under. Obviously, we know the Dolphins' offense is going to put up points. The opposite side of this game, the Miami Dolphins' defense isn't that great. And I know they just traded for Bradley Chubb, but they just overpaid the absolute shit out of him. I don't understand that trade at all, by the way. You gave up a ton of draft capital for a guy who's underperformed his whole career and that no one's really afraid of that you think is going to impact your defense. Whatever. That's neither here nor there. The problem here is that I think that the extension of the run game that the Bears have finally started to use with Justin Fields, after you go watch what they did against one of the best defensives structurally and execution-wise in the Dallas Cowboys, this Bears offense could put a lot of points and a lot of pressure on the Miami Dolphins this week because they can run the ball from anywhere, from any point on the field, any distance, any down a distance, because Justin Fields is that good and he's starting to gain a lot of confidence. And I think that Chase Claypool can actually help as an extension of not just the run game, much like we've talked about with Rondale Moore. Two very different players, obviously, Rondale Moore and Chase Claypool, but they offer some of the same skill set. We've seen the Pittsburgh Steelers use Chase Claypool on end arounds and in a lot of different ways because he's a very unique player, very good athlete, and he has a lot of different skills. The Bears have been struggling to find receiver help. They went out and traded, maybe overpaid. Actually, not maybe. They absolutely overpaid with a high second-round draft pick that's going to be. I don't really know what the thought process was there because this is not a number one receiver, but at the end of the day, he's essentially going to be the number one on that team. Maybe Darnell Mooney's the one and Chase Claypool's the two, but that's probably what I see happening, and it's a good dynamic. You have a really big-bodied receiver that can make some plays down the middle of the field. He can do a lot of things behind the line of scrimmage, motion him. You can get in the ball in screens, and he can make some damage against a defense. And when you add the element that is the legs of Justin Fields, there's something brewing there. Khalil Herbert's having a good season. David Montgomery. He grinds out yards. He fights for extra yards. And I really like that style of play. You had that 1-2 punch and, you know, the thunder and the lightning, as you will, with Herbert and Montgomery. And then you add Justin Fields to that run game. It really is dynamic. And there's a play from the Cowboys game last week. I tweeted it. Actually, I put it on TikTok. If you guys don't follow me on TikTok. I do these pretty much every day now during the week. I do film breakdowns for it. And there's a pin pull. That's a run scheme play that the Bears pulled against the Cowboys last week, but it was Justin Fields running the pin pull action, not the running back. They had David Montgomery go to the right side, more like a play action pin pull feel, and it was really well executed, because even though there's kind of chaos around the quarterback and around the runner with defensive players everywhere, none of them were close enough to be able to actually tackle that kind of player in space. He never looked like he felt worried about getting tackled. He was just moving within space, and I think that the natural ability of the offense to get player in space, to use Justin Fields that way, is dynamic, and I know that they want to start doing that more. They've talked about stealing plays from the Baltimore Ravens. That's only going to make their offense better. Obviously, this game could be a lot of fun. I know that we've had a generally underwhelming offensive performance for most teams in the NFL this year. And so me talking about four games that could go over, maybe it doesn't end up going that way. But the Dolphins have the fastest receivers in the NFL. That's a fact. Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill are the best duo in the NFL, period. Bar none. There is no comparison. That's just what it is. And that's fine. Tua has been operating quickly, getting the ball out quick. He's pre and post snap reading well, efficiently. Again, I know he talked about people making fun of his deep ball and him kind of like saying that it's been better. Go watch some of his deep balls. Those hang up there. Tyreek Hill has had to readjust backwards to multiple deep balls and he's bailed them out a few times. Like, okay, I understand you guys are happy. You're playing with confidence and stuff, but your arm is kind of still not very good. So the problem for that is that over the course of the season, when it gets into the cold weather, if they make the playoffs, not playing in Miami, that's where the arm strength is going to hurt him a little bit more. But we don't have to worry about that right now. Maybe you do in Chicago. It's going to be like, what, 50, 58 degrees in Chicago? Probably not have to worry so much. But playing away from Miami does have its impact on Tua. So maybe that happens in this game. I'm not so certain that it will. But trading for Jeff Wilson Jr., does that impact Raheem Mostert? Man, I hope not. I have kind of too much of Raheem Mostert. And last week's game against a Detroit Lions defense, they just did not get him the ball enough, in my opinion, and it was really disappointing. But that rushing attack is, it's okay, it's fine. Raheem Mostert's the best fit for it. So it really seems like more insurance that Jeff Wilson's there now that Chase Edmonds is gone. So I still am pretty confident in Raheem Mostert being the guy. Mike Gesicki scored a touchdown last week. That's kind of where it's at. Oh, look, he scored a touchdown. Cool. They can't use him properly, so I don't really have much confidence in Mike Gesicki to be able to continuously score fantasy points. But again, this game could be a lot of fun. I'm going to have fun watching it because I do think that the two different styles of offense with Miami, it's get your players down the field and just get them open and they will get open and just fire it to them, because Tua has done a great job of getting the ball to Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. We know that they are like top five, top six in receiving yards on the season. Tyreek Hill leads all receivers in the NFL in receiving yards. And on the opposite end, it's about getting their quarterback in space. And Justin Fields starting to play with more confidence, and this offense is starting to find a little bit of a groove. And that's really fun because, again, they do have some fun players starting to use Velus Jones Jr. a little bit better. He had a drop that should have been a touchdown last week and a beautifully thrown ball down the right sideline to Velus Jones. Man, Justin Fields, his confidence is starting to just explode. Like, that's what I can see from Justin Fields, and he's starting to feel it. And getting him on the move has really helped get him into a groove. So I'm excited about that aspect as well. I'm just really excited about watching Tua versus Justin Fields and seeing how these two different styles of offenses go head to head and can put up some points. So make sure you watch that game, because I think this could be a lot of fun. That's all we got time for today. Next week, I'm hoping to have another guest on. It's just been, you know, everyone's got their schedules and we're working on getting through that. But I hope you guys had fun listening to me talk and ramble about some football. Again, if you guys don't follow me on Twitter, please do. Tons and tons of film analysts at InHarmsWay19. All of my pseudonyms and all of my social media stuff is at InHarmsWay19. Again, on TikTok and Twitter as well. So I'll see you guys next week for sure. We will continue to have these pumped out. If you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, feel free to hit me up on Twitter. Also, the Fantasy Football Astronauts Discord. If you don't have a link to it, make sure you reach out and I will get you one from Jetpack, or you can ask Jetpack as well on Twitter at Jetpack Galileo. Well, that's all for us this week. This is the Fantasy Football Astronauts podcast, and we're blasting off once again. See you guys next time.